Welcome to Always On, a Yes podcast. This is Jovan Julian, the storytelling and alignment integrator at Yes. Yes is a 30-year-old organization that works at the intersection of the personal, interpersonal, and systemic change. We co-organize transformative learning spaces called JAMS with partners all over the globe, working together to co-create spaces of creativity, passion, and commitment. When musicians come together to jam, they bring their unique instruments, skills, and styles, and together create a new collective sound. We build on that premise, bringing together social change makers like activists, organizers, healers, lawyers, educators, artists, and more to collaborate and co-liberate towards the world we want to see. On this show, and throughout the season, we'll be slowing down to hear story from jam facilitants, Yes staff members, and of course, Yes jammers, with a focus on how folks are adapting, adjusting, and evolving to meet the moment that 2020 calls us into. We're grateful for your choice to slow down with us today.
Hello, friends. This is Hanzadeh, Community Learning and Partnership Coordinator for Yes. And today, we have a very special guest on the other side of the line, a facilitant that probably facilitated in many teams around the world for so many jams. That's why we wanted to start with her. So ladies and gentlemen, here is Shilpa Jain. Welcome, Shilpa Jain.
Thank you, Hanzadeh.
How are you today?
I am good. I'm very excited for this. I'm feeling great.
Okay. Thank you so much for saying yes. And I want to start, like, as I mentioned, like, a lot of our friends, facilitant friends, and most part of the Jamily knows you. But before we get into details of facilitation and yes, I want to ask you, like, who are you?
Oh, just a small question.
Very small question.
I like how you said these were going to be easy questions. Who am I? Wow, there's so many ways to answer that question.
No, like your childhood, your education, whatever, because then I'm going to link this to the question of, like, how does that impact your facilitation today? So I don't only want to ask you about, like, your education, but, like, your family. Who are you? What's your life journey?
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, I was born in a suburb of Chicago. My parents are both immigrants from India, and they came to the U.S. in 1971, 72, and I was born a few years later. And I was lucky enough to be born in a really incredibly diverse neighborhood with people from Thailand and Taiwan and Korea and India and Pakistan and Haiti. And it was really an amazing place to be growing up. I also was really lucky to grow up with a lot of aunties and uncles. My parents made friends with other people from Rajasthan all around the Chicago area. And so every weekend we would travel to someone's house, or we had a bunch of families come to our house. And this happened for at least, I mean, my entire childhood, so 15, 16 years of my life that I can remember, and still happens. And so I'd like to say that I actually learned community building first from my parents, because they were so committed that I would have an experience of Rajasthani language and culture and food and festivals and all of that, that they helped built this community. And these were our extended, my extended family. I mean, I literally called everyone auntie and uncle. So they were really part of our family. So I got to grow up in this connected worlds in my neighborhood and my school with a lot of people from all over the world, and then have this beautiful kind of internal community from around Rajasthan, India, all around Chicago. And I went into school and public school, public education. And I think it was in school that I started questioning some of the way the systems were set up, because in my public school, we would all be tested in first grade. And we would be put in a track. So kids who got scored very well on the test would get into the gifted track. kids who did okay would just be in the average regular track, and then kids who didn't do very well would be put in a remedial track. And when I first, that happened in first grade. So in second grade, we started being separated. I would be pulled out for these gifted classes and things like that. And I just remember thinking, why wouldn't everyone want to experience these cool puzzles and interesting topics and other things that I was getting exposed to as a young person? And it didn't seem right because it was just one test on one day. And then my kind of questioning about that system grew as I got older and more mature. And I was like, oh, this whole thing is based on kicking out a bunch of people who don't fit a mold that is said to be around intelligence. But I don't know. It's really just like I'm a good test taker. And even my friends who would be in those classes with me, some of them maybe would have need more time for their homework or this or that. And those things came easily to me. So it made me think this isn't fair. This isn't actually based on anything legitimate. This is just kind of random based on whoever can do this thing. And therefore I didn't trust it. So that's a lot of where I also started to grow up. And I also grew up with a big brother, Manish, who's 7.5 years older than me, and also invested a lot of energy into me as a young person. So he would give me harder books to read. He would talk to me about political issues and got me interested in environmental issues. He took me to see Malcolm X when I was 15 years old, and we had a big discussion, and I read the autobiography of Malcolm X. And so it was so much of my political, social justice awareness, environmental awareness that was sparked there. And then I kind of continued it through my high school and college and all of that. But my brother really played a big role in my life and pushing me to take on different challenges and opportunities and go beyond my comfort zone in so many ways. So that's some of my childhood.
Thank you. I think there's a lot of like bits and pieces of like information in everybody's childhood for what who they are today and what they're doing today. So I just wanted to link it from here. And yeah, it totally makes sense listening to your childhood and your experience. So having said all of that, like when was the first time you facilitated or like when do you remember? It doesn't necessarily have to be with yes, even prior to yes. Do you remember that moment? Oh, I did something. And it's like, maybe you didn't know the term facilitation, but what was that experience?
Yeah, I do remember. I think I was 7 years old or something, 6, 7. I can't remember exactly how old, but we would have these, as I mentioned, we'd have these parties every weekend where we'd go around and have different families. And I remember inventing a cooperative game at one of those parties in my own basement in our house. We had these four poles, and there were five of us kids. And so we played a game where each one of us would be on a pole and one would be in the center, and they would try to get a pole. And then if they got a pole, whoever didn't have the pole would be in the center, and then they would try to get a pole. And we'd have to switch, you know. And I remember creating this game, and I used to create games all the time. And then creating a game where everyone could be included, no one would be out. And so that is one moment that I really definitely remember facilitating and just being like, okay, introducing the game and having us play. We played for a long, long time because it was very enjoyable and we laughed a lot and played. And so that and then, you know, with other little groups of friends just helping to organize games, conversations. And then my four best friends in high school and I, three of whom are still very, very close friends of mine, we would get together and have sleepover parties in high school. And I remember facilitating a lot there too, where we'd provoke each other with interesting questions and we'd all have to answer these questions and listen to each other. And we'd tell each other what we really liked about the other. And then we'd also say, these are the things you could improve in yourself and all kinds of things where we were just sharing and really inventing these exercises and activities without even knowing what they were. And then in more formal roles, I remember running meetings and things like that. But the real facilitation that I think of is these ones with these different friends. It's really young.
Yeah, which sounds like a history of facilitation. I don't know. It's like it's over 30 years. If you started when you were 7, it's definitely over 30 years.
35.
And 35, yeah, to be exact. So, like starting with facilitation of games with friends and like more formal settings, meetings and stuff, and then facilitation of community, navigating through conflict, going deep into difficult conversations has been, I think, a part of your journey with Yes. And then like your facilitation also evolved over time. So reflecting on all of the experiences of facilitation that you had over the 35 years, what does facilitation mean to you? What is it for you?
I think facilitation means to me that it's creating and helping to create environments, spaces, cultures, where each person can bring something to the whole, where they're valued, each person is valued, and where there's a sense of really learning together and growing together. I think for me, the learning and the growth, or the unlearning and the uplearning, this is all very, very vital to facilitation. So everyone making a contribution, helping to support everyone to make a contribution, helping to support people to be learning, playing, understanding themselves and each other more deeply, and generating a sense of the whole together, that there's something whole that's greater than us as individuals. It's collective. That can be joy. That could be an insight. That could be a vision. We create something out of our presences together. And so for me, facilitation is the art of supporting that to happen, supporting that creation to happen, supporting that coming together to happen, supporting those contributions to happen.
Well, that's, I hear a lot of like, yes, jams facilitation meaning to you, because I believe like out of the 35 years, that was the longest journey of facilitation in your life, like in jam facilitation. So I want to shift the conversation over there a little bit, how you ended up being at Yes, and then you became the executive director. I know you're almost completing your 10 years now, or you're in your ninth year. So you started with the, how did your paths cross each other? The Yes and Shilpa Jain, and then you became the executive director. What does it mean to be the executive director of Yes? And what does it mean to, I know there's a bunch of questions, but I want you to reflect them all and I can remind later on. Yes, how you guys met, facilitating for Yes and being the executive director. How did all of that happen and what does it mean today for you?
So I heard about Yes in 2001 and my brother Manish had gone to South Africa for a gathering that was being organized by the Burkana Institute, Margaret Wheatley's work. And Kumba Ture was there at that same gathering in South Africa. And my brother and Kumba met and they had a great connection and talked a lot about popular education, which Kumba was working with the Institute for Popular Education in Mali at the time. And Manish talked about Shikshanthar and our work there. And Kumba said, you know, I'm involved with something called the JAM. It's the World Youth Leadership JAM. I think you should come. You'll love it. And my brother said, well, I'm a little outside of your age range. At that time, I think my brother was 32. He said, but I have a sister who's 24. She's right in your age range, and she would love this. This would be great. So I'll introduce you. So I got an email from Kumba, and she sent over the JAM invitation. And I remember thinking, this is so amazing. Because by that point in my own journey in activism, and I've been an activist in various ways, I mean, really since I was like, I don't know, 10, 11 years old and started getting passionate about environmental issues and then social justice issues, human rights and all of that. So it'd been a long time. It'd already been 10, 12 years. I mean, half my life at that point, I'd been an activist. And what I was learning though, is that there was so much like right or wrong, in or out, our way or not this way. It was a lot of like, hierarchies, a lot of divisiveness in the activist cultures that I was connected to, and this is through the 90s. And so I was kind of feeling over that. I just didn't want to keep being part of that. It didn't feel right to me. Like the feeling part of me, the emotional part of me didn't feel right in that. So when I read the invitation for the JAM, I was like, wow, this is amazing. All issues are connected and central and, oh, wow, this is so cool. Inner wisdom and the fine art of hanging out. And I just remember reading these descriptions and thinking, oh, this is, I've never seen anything like this before. I'm excited. So I applied, was selected for the World Jam. And I went the following summer and in 2002. And when I was at that jam, I was just like, it was the first time I really felt like I sat in a circle where people unmasked and where people were honest and vulnerable and shared what was there for them. And people cried in the circle. And I'd realized like, oh, this is a space that I used to have with my friends in college and high school. We would share really real things from our hearts. And then we would cry and we would be there for each other. But I'd never seen that connect to the work of activism and social change. Because mostly it was a lot about being like strong and being tough and being smart and being smarter than the other person. And so to see that kind of vulnerability was so moving to me. And then the play, and then that very first night we were hanging out and I said, oh, to the group, I said, I have a really fun game. Do you want to play it? And it's a cooperative game. And that game was, it's a hilarious game where you pair up in a circle and one person sits in the center. And everyone else is sitting in their pairs, one person behind, one in front. And the one in front, the one who's in the center, gets to call the names of anyone who's in the front. And that person, of the people in the front, they have to try to be the first one to kiss the person on the cheek. And their partner, meanwhile, is going to hold them back and make sure they can't go. And then they switch places and all of that. And it's hilarious. And then whoever kisses on the cheek first, they get in the center and then they get to call. And you can call many names. And it's just very funny and very silly. And we played. And then I'm just offered because I love games and I love play. But I remember then 2 days into the jam, one of the participants said to the group, I want to thank Shilpa for that game the first night, because I noticed how much in our culture we already have so many hugs and kisses and just warmth. And it feels so good to be in a community like this. And, I'd always offer those things. And I think that moment was when it clicked that it actually has an impact on the community in these ways. So that was my intro, yes. And then the team invited me to become a facilitator for that jam. And there are many other things. That the kissing game wasn't the only thing I shared at the jam. I just shared a lot of
You impressed the yes team with a lot of games and silly games. With
open space technology and with conversations about education and reframing things. And I participated and it was so much fun. I still have so many dear friends from that jam. I just loved it so much. And so they invited me in. Then the journey went on. I went to a second jam before the first World Jam, my first World Jam of facilitating, which was the first Leveraging Privilege for Social Change jam. And that was its own experience. I could talk about that story too. But anyway, out of that and my participation there, and then I was also invited to become part of that team. And so then those were the two jams. And I started facilitating. This is 2003, 2004, 2005, and so on and so on. And then with many people, got very curious about what are these jams? Like, what are we doing really? And how do we understand it and make sense of what's happening? And then start to practice it in more places, because we were getting more than 100 applications for a World Jam. And there was a desire for more people to be there. And anyway, so we started evolving and creating and evolving and creating. So, in 2010, when Ocean Robbins, who was the founding director of the organization, decided to step down after 20 years of service, after a little period of transition, the board invited me to become the executive director. And I said I would do it. I just didn't want to become the executive director the way that people do it in the United States as a nonprofit works. And I wanted to do it as a partner, because I'd been a partner for YES for so long, and in the World Jam and the Leveraging Privilege for Social Change Jam, helping to start the Middle East Jam, and bringing lots and lots of people that I'd met all over the world into the jam. And so I wanted to be in a space of partnership rather than kind of the traditional role of just fundraising and management and not really being connected so much to the programs. That didn't appeal to me. So I spoke with the board about that and talked about my vision, and they were on board. They were happy for me to try that on. And so that's 2011 is when I took over the role. And since then, it's really been a building process and really taking a lot of the beautiful learnings that I had in the first 10 years of my work with YES, and especially a lot of learning that happened through this global collaborative, this community of 15 jam leaders from around the world, from 14 countries. And we'd gather and share and explore and dive deep into what is the jam and how does it work and what are the elements and how do we experiment with it? And we'd go off and do experiments and come back and learn and share. And all of that learning really brought me forward into my own leadership. So I went and then really started to access the alumni, the people who were really passionate about jamming and who wanted to, and started to work with them and craft new leadership. And I think a lot of my work has been to develop more leadership in the jam community, moving from being just a very small, like, okay, nonprofit doing one or two programs to really supporting teams around the world to generate more and more programs and more creative offerings beyond even the jams. So I'm very delighted with all of that.
Wow. So it's also like, so I feel so excited to listen to all of this because now I like listening to the beginning part of the story because now I know Yes is jamming with 30 jam teams. So when you say leadership transformation, being the community learning person for Yes now, I'm going through the list and I know leadership transformation looks like 27, 30 teams around the world who are facilitating. And I know some of them are facilitating like without your presence being there. So I wanted to ask you, so this is also the big move from India in 2010 to United States of America, right? Back to US.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2009 is when I moved and then 2010 is when Ocean stepped down and 2011 is when I took over. Yes. So
yeah. So it's a very long journey. 18 years of jamming and almost 10 years of working with Yes values and principles and then also like in the making of like contributing, transforming those values and principles. Sounds like your journey from where I participated it almost 10 years ago. So I also know like facilitation has a lot of formats and it's so different in so many different spaces. So I want to specifically ask, what is facilitation in Yes, and how is it different than facilitation of other spaces? What's the difference, or is there a difference for you?
I think, well, there's a few differences for me when I'm facilitating a Yes Jam versus other spaces that I do also facilitate. I think in a Yes Jam, I because of the facilitant or facilitant, you know, that I'm participating fully and facilitating, that's really made possible because of a team that's present, you know? So, and the working together with a team, I think is one of the definitive factors of a Yes Jam that is unique to just like facilitation. I know a lot of people facilitate on their own or just maybe with one other person, but to have teams of 5, 6 people, and then additionally, maybe organizers as well who are part of the community, there's a real richness there. And I think it allows for me as a facilitator to show up and offer more of my own vulnerability that is not always possible if I'm the only one there that needs to also help make the space open enough for everyone to be able to share. So my own vulnerability is there to a point. I can offer little things, but the bigger stretches that I can take, the more risks I can take are really made possible by having a team that is also holding and supporting me. And I think one of the things that really, to me, is a beautiful aspect of jam facilitation is very as quickly as possible, the team is trying to transfer its own holding of power and understanding to the whole community. So we're like this little heartbeat that is trying to spread the blood flow to all of the circle. And then everyone in the circle has the power to make space, to listen, to their listening power, their making space, their slowing down, their vulnerability is what makes the jam. It's like, and I know you've been a part of jams where we feel like, oh, wow, the whole community is in. And I know you've also been a part of jams where a couple of people are kind of not so in and they're on the edge. And it's okay because the community has the space to move and shape. But there is something very profound when as a team, we've been able to support that. And really understand as a team. And I think part of what makes it shift is when as a team and me as an individual facilitator in that, take the risk of having my own vulnerability there. It allows for that shifting to happen, for that alchemy to happen where the whole community becomes the container holder, the builder of the experience. And I think that's not always true in other facilitation that I do. And sometimes I feel, you know, more, and sometimes in other facilitation, I'm trying to transfer and offer the agreements and the intentions and everything that can help the community hold. But not every time does everybody want that. Sometimes they want to be more held instead of doing the holding. So sometimes the balance is a little bit different. Again, and my own ability to stretch or share as much is a little bit different in different spaces than in the jam, where because of the team and then because of the efforts we make to share with the whole, it feels like it's like a beautiful expression of full community to me.
I hear you. I'm also going to remind, this interview is not based on appreciative inquiry, so I'm not only going to ask for things that you appreciate in this role or in facilitation. And so shifting slowly to those questions, one of the things you mentioned, you know, in jams, how when the community makes space for others and holds the space for someone who is sharing vulnerably, you also as Yes, at the organization, at Yes, we don't invite everyone to become a facilitant, even though people can do it in a community. So who do you invite as a facilitant in the teams? How does that process work?
Well, the process works that as a team, at the end of the jam, we come together and we talk about who are people who kind of showed up through their participation in ways that makes us feel like they could be part of helping to support the group going forward. And of course, first we, as a team, we talk about how we felt, each of us did, and all of that. So that's a later conversation. But first we reflect on our own experiences. And for some people, they may have been their first time or maybe many times, and they feel like they're ready to move on, that they don't have the capacity or space in their life, or maybe they did it for the first time, it didn't feel like a fit, it was too hard. Because jam facilitation is also very unique in that we're constantly changing and having to meet the moment. It's a lot of improvisation, it's a lot of flexibility. So people who are used to kind of plans and order, they struggle and they don't like it. You know, it's not fun to keep changing the plan like this, or, whoa, this person started having a moment and they needed a little more attention. Well, I had a whole plan and I lost my plan, and they struggle with it and they don't like it, you know? So people also leave, or we notice that they're struggling a lot. We talk about that and say, maybe this isn't quite the right fit. So of course, there's all of that first within the team. But following all of that, we look at kind of who was in the group and how they participated. Did they share? Did they take off their mask? Did they support the group? Were they supportive to other people? Were they helping to make space with other people in the community? Like, you know, energetically, I find that there are people who can really see conflicts or challenges and then work to bring people together. They're really curious about that, and they don't take sides. And then there are people who struggle with that. They kind of get polarized. They take a side and they create defenses and offenses, and that's okay. There's no judgment about that. It's just that's very hard to support as a jam facilitator from that location, because it is about holistic. It's the jam. It's the music. It's the whole music, you know. So we look at those aspects and talk about that as a team, and then we have to agree as a team about whoever feels like a good person to bring in, or good people to bring in. And we also look at the makeup of the team. You know, the jams also thrive upon diversity. So if we have a team that's primarily all from one place, or mostly all one gender expression or sexuality expression, or mostly all one racial expression, or we want to diversify the group too, so that more people can feel welcome, more people can see themselves in the team, which would bring more people into the space. So we also look at that. Those factors are also there. So if we have like three or four or five really great people, ooh, they all could be potential facilitants. And then we'll sort of say, well, we don't have many people who bring this element or this aspect or this identity in, and we want to bring that in. And so we'll make choices that way too.
So I'm hearing a lot of things. So it's a bunch of things that causes an invitation to someone. Not necessarily only the character or the skill set of that person, but also the setup of the team. So I want to from there I want to ask about like jam teams. What are the most important values and principles to be a jam team? You know, and team is also a concept. So there is a team at work, there is a team at home, there is a team at school. You know, like What is a JAM team and how is it different from other teams? And then what are the values and principles that makes a JAM team strong? Or flip side of the coin, what are the things that would be a challenge for a JAM team?
Well, at the core, a team is a group of people, a JAM team is a group of people who've agreed to put on an invitation that's going to work on personal transformation, interpersonal transformation, systemic transformation, because that's what the JAMs are. So there has to be an agreement around that. Oh, I want to put out an invitation. I want to work on these layers of transformation. And I'm willing to be vulnerable in that journey. I'm willing to support everyone in that journey to the best as I can. I'm willing to ask for support. And that's also part of my vulnerability. The other aspects of being part of a team, which we often talk about as preparing in terms of being able to sense and be flexible and improvise, being able to frame and ground and weave and make connections, explain activities, monitor time, some more aspects of traditional facilitation. I think many of those can be learned. You know, those are skills. They're practice. Some of us have that naturally, and some of us maybe need more practice at them, but they're all practice. They're all skills. They're all muscles. But what makes the team is people coming together to answer that, to pull out that invitation. They're answering it in themselves, and then they're putting it out to others. And they're living their lives and doing their work and whatever they are up to in the world with that in mind, you know. So it doesn't work in a team if I'm trying to just jam at the JAM, and then the rest of my life I'm like creating divisiveness and speaking in the we and generalizing. I can't make the transition to the JAM as an individual on that team. And so as a team, collectively, we have to be doing that work, each one of us and together. I think another thing that makes the JAM team work is the willingness to address conflicts with each other and work with them. And work with them to the point where we feel like I can trust you. Because if I don't trust or you don't trust me, then it's very hard because there's so much change that happens in a JAM. There's so much unpredictability. So I need the foundation of trust to be able to work together with the other people, which means I have to be able to be real or bring my conflicts forward and work through those. And if we're not able to work through the other side, that means that team really probably won't make it through, you know. And that's happened. You know, there's been jams where we've struggled and where as a team, we didn't have alignment. Different ones of us were coming with different understandings. I remember one team where it was a first time facilitator and he really wanted to just not have to speak in the eye and not have eye language in it. And it was very difficult and it was very last minute his coming on board. So there were a lot of things that kind of didn't work out and it created a lot of struggle in the JAM because when some of those core values we have to agree upon as a team, as what you're asking for, like speaking from the eye, willingness to work through conflicts, naming what's present, not holding or saying, I'm not going to share what's bothering me, or I'm not going to share what's bothering me about you and expect you to figure it out and then get upset when you don't and then create all this, you know, no, that doesn't work as a team. You know, there has to be transparency. There has to be honesty and openness. And willingness to be in difficult conversations together. So I think those are the things that really, to me, speak of a team. And my favorite part about it is that we also have a lot of fun. There's a lot of love on the team, a lot of mutual admiration, respect, a lot of desire to learn from each other, help each other, really appreciation for what magic each person brings. That's where the joy comes in, because I don't think anyone's part of a JAM team for, you know, there's no money benefit in it. I mean, you know, people are receiving an honorarium, but it's not for that. It's because of the joy of our souls. And so for the joyful soul part, I enjoy being with these people. I love this team. I love having fun with them and learning with them. And I'm willing to be with them through the hard shit that comes up. That's what I know. That's that realness. That's the gift. So.
Thank you so much. It's been so nice, the collection of like all the values that a team is based on. I wanted to ask this question specifically because the experience for me is very solid. So goes the team, so goes the JAM. So I think it's a very important part of JAM facilitation to be a team. And as a person who learned facilitation from you, not only from you, but like the major element of me being a part of being a facilitant is through my observations and my experience with facilitating with you. As a facilitant who has a lot of struggles at times, also as a person who loves facilitating, I want to ask you, like, what is, okay, you mentioned about, like, you love the team, you love the jam, you love the facilitation, you always have time and space. What don't you love? Like, what's the part that's struggling for you? Times that you feel stressed? And what are the parts that you don't like?
Well, what don't I love? I don't love it when like different teammates come together and people are too full up from everything else, like too busy and have too many things going on that they're not present. Because I think it's the hardest thing to work with when people are oversaturated from other parts of their life, whether that's work or family. It's understandable. There's no judgment there. It's just I don't love it because it makes it harder for those who are present to really do things. And so I love it when we're able to kind of really come together and drop in and be present with each other. And so the opposite of that is really challenging. I don't love it when like only one or two people are kind of holding the burden of the work and the responsibility for the whole team. Sometimes that's happened where for a combination of factors, sometimes people take on more because they feel like, oh, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. And then they don't distribute labor. And sometimes people abdicate their responsibilities. They let go and they're like, oh, so-and-so's got it. And so I don't like it. It doesn't have to be equal, like, and it has to feel equitable. It has to feel like there's some balance, I think, in the team for the team to feel good. Otherwise, there's conflicts within the team that are just about like, I did too much and you did too little. And that doesn't feel good as a community, I think. Doesn't feel good for me either if I feel that, you know, and I've been with other team members who felt like they've taken on more. So that doesn't feel good. Let's see. I don't like it when, you know, and this has happened a few different times where people show up to the prep meetings right before the jam, carrying some conflict that they've had for months with one person on the team or with the whole team and have never mentioned it despite many calls or despite, you know, many opportunities. I don't love that because it feels like an erosion of the trust that's so essential. And it feels like there's hard work to do in the jam and there's beautiful work to do and there's joy, there's all of this. And the work just feels harder if I don't know I can trust that whoever this person might be, that they've actually been real the whole time. I mean, I can't expect that from participants. And I do have that expectation with the team is that if something comes up that we bring it up to each other and talk about it and work our way through it. So I don't like that. I don't like holding things. And then having some expectation and then waiting till the last ever moment to bring it out. I find that very exhausting. And let's see if there's anything else I don't like. Yeah. And I think I don't like, you know, it's a process. All of us, each person is jamming. It's a process, a journey. Sometimes there's going to be panic zones. Sometimes there's going to be, you know, struggle, and that's okay. I'm okay with all of that. What I don't like, though, is when people are building their lives in a way that reaffirms their struggles again and again and again. So they're coming back with the same struggles. They're not moving forward, you know. And that's not, it's not a personal judgment about that. It just makes it harder, again, as a team to connect because the person's not coming having been jamming. They've been coming in panic. And a lot of panic and structured panic for a long period of time. So it makes it hard for them to show up. And that has an effect on us as a team. So, and having been on over 100 jams at this point, I've had all kinds of experiences with people. I mean, I love all of the people, you know, I still have love in my heart for every person, even the ones where it's been very hard. Those are the places where I think about when I think about the painful jams and the ones that have not really worked, it's when there's been this breakdown with the person and with the team that's happened. So yeah.
Thank you. I think it's really important because like, it's really important for me when I know what I don't like, then I do something to heal it, something to cure it, you know? But does this also mean now that I know there are parts that you don't like it when certain things happen? Are you like, do you know everything? So what are you growing at in facilitation?
No, I don't know everything, Hanzade.
Yeah,
thank you.
Do you know everything in terms of facilitation? That's the question. What are you growing at? Like, what is a stretch in facilitation for you? Where you still keep learning?
Well, I was just saying this actually on a previous call that I had with someone who was asking about leadership development. And I think one of the big unlearnings I've had to have in my life because of my own education, which kind of told me, okay, you learn something and then you know it. And facilitation isn't like that. Facilitation is a practice, just like mindfulness is a practice, just like exercise is a practice. It's not like, oh, now I'm done. I did it that day. I've done it for 10 years. I've done it for 20 years. Now I know everything. No, because every time, just like I'm going to grow and evolve my own soul and be on a spiritual journey, facilitation is a similarly for me, kind of a spiritual journey where the universe is going to continuously present me with challenges, struggles, ask me to test my boundaries. Am I going to voice the things that I feel uncomfortable with? You know, am I going to name them? And if I don't, I'm going to have the consequences and I'm going to learn from that. And then I get another chance and try again, you know, or am I going to try to be present here when I've not been present before? That's a stretch. Okay. I have to stretch there. I think always like meeting conflict, you know, and the part of me that wants harmony and ease wants to be like, oh, just like, let's not fight. But then the part of me that knows, this is the part, that's so good. It wakes up and says, yeah. And that's a process. That's like a practice that I've been in for a long time in my own. And I know that that's a big part of shifting the world and shifting the jams is how I am with conflict, how each of us is. Of conflict and seeing this as an opportunity is a beautiful place to grow versus a problem to be solved or fixed, you know, is very different. So that work I think is always there. I'm always going to be stretching and practicing the muscle of presence, always going to be practicing the muscle of listening, trying to name and face my boundaries. I think that's always a thing because I love people. I don't want to hurt people. And practicing direct feedback has been a very important part of my work as well. And sometimes that hurts people. Like, and I have to accept that too. And I also have to think about, well, I have to be honest. So I'm holding the balance of honesty and love. And that line sometimes feels very clear and very easeful. And sometimes it doesn't. It's painful. It's a struggle. So those places I feel like I grow. And I'm also like just in practical facilitation stuff. You know, I love learning new games and new songs and new meditations and new exercises, and I'm loving growing more in somatic work, body wisdom, and all of that. That stuff I didn't really have a lot of information about, only through games and learning so much more about that, the brain and how it works, and I geek out on all of that. So I love all of that learning too. So there's all this kind of practical learning in terms of information tools, techniques, and the soul work learning, I think, is lifelong, you know, and I don't have any illusion that at some point I'm going to just be done with it all and have gotten it all, you know. No, universe doesn't work that way. Universe is a trickster and loves to come back around and give me something else that I didn't anticipate. Right now, a lot of my learning is really like stepping into spaces that I've not been working in mostly. I'm working online. I have to do a lot of online learning. I hate it. I hate being online. I love being in the flesh and I can't right now. So that's a big learning and unlearning. Or you really love being with mostly like a very diverse group of people. And now I've been called to work more in with older folks and more white folks. And this is also very interesting. It's different for me. So I'm stretching myself in new ways all the time.
Thank you. It's so nice to put perspective to, you know, that the learning process for facilitation doesn't end. Okay, so this part is the final part, which I will call moments. So I'm going to ask you times and moments when you felt in a certain way while you were facilitating. So like bum, bum, bum kind of answers is my intention here. So And I know this is a good way to start with you because you have a great memory. So tell me about a time you felt very ashamed while facilitating.
I think when I attacked a participant once, I was very angry about. I don't want to go into the specific details of the person, but I was really angry about some injustice, and I took it out on one of the participants.
Good. Okay, so another time when you felt enlightened, like an aha moment, like, oh.
I think it was in one of our jams in Anatolia when the country was being divided in 50-50, us or them, and we were having every moment there's like another conflict between two people that was coming forward into the group and we'd have to process it. And I think the enlightenment came in. I was like, just recognizing what it's been, the systemic message of you're with us or against us and how that was showing up and naming that for the group and then watching the group change from that. And that wasn't my information. That just kind of came in as a download. And I remember Aishagul saying to me at that point, she's like, are you channeling Martin Luther King or something? Like, what's happening right now? And I'm like, I don't know. It just came in and I shared it. So that felt a very powerful moment.
Oh. What's a moment you loved so much? I know there are so many, but pick one.
Gosh. Well, and because I'm talking to you, I'm thinking of all these moments with
shift,
you.
Shift, shift, shift. Egypt, Pakistan, India.
So much. I've had so much joy with so many, like almost every team that I've ever been on. So that's just a hard question. I love so much. I remember being on the first law jam, at the end of the first law jam. The team was outside. We left all the participants inside to do their evaluations. And we came outside and we're standing outside and we just started telling these really just silly stories of our lives. And one of our team members revealed that she had done some drugs when she was younger. And we just couldn't believe it. And we just were laughing. It was just so funny, the whole thing. We were laughing and laughing. We were laughing so loud that one of the participants came out and was like, are you guys okay? Because we were disturbing them, even from like 30 feet away, that they could still hear us laughing and joking. Yeah.
Okay, so one final moment where you felt like love and like compassion in any moment.
So many moments. One moment in, I think, the first Egypt jam when one of the participants came out as being gay, and it was so brave of him to do that in the atmosphere as it was. And the community, the love that the community expressed, and I think the love that was expressed by so many people who were religious towards him was breathtakingly, like miraculously beautiful. And so that love, to see that love in action, to see someone held and loved for who they are, that's just a moment that's coming to me right now.
Thanks.
I feel like I've had the gift of being able to witness miracles like that so many times.
Thank you so much. So that's all the questions I had in mind. But do you feel like I missed a question, or is there something that you want to say on facilitation to the jam facilitants, to folks that are listening to this podcast and in our community?
I mean, I guess the only thing I want to say is that it's been, I think, it's been an honor in my life to be who I am and doing this work in this way. And I want to thank and express so much gratitude for all the people who trusted me these years, trusted me when I came through with something good and still trusted me even when I didn't, you know, when I didn't have it or I didn't couldn't find it. Yeah, I'm in awe of how much love I've received, how much support I've received, and I'm so, so, so grateful for it. And it's been a blessing to make these spaces, to make these spaces of growth and healing and learning together. So I'm so grateful. I know I don't do anything by myself. I know I'm so held by greater forces and powers and held by my teams. And I would never want to do it without them. That's it.
Thank you, Shilpa Jane. Thank you so much. So that will be our first facilitant interview on our podcast series on facilitation. So thank you all for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to Always On, a Yes podcast. Join us in the next few weeks for more episodes of season 2. And if you're interested in participating in a future episode, please email us at Jovan, J-O-V-A-N, @yesworld.org. See you next week.